You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. After a seven-week showdown, Mike Johnson finally has sworn in Congresswoman-elect Alita Grijalva from Arizona. Take a listen to what she said moments after she was sworn in.
What is most concerning is not what this administration has done, but what the majority in this body has failed to do. Hold Trump accountable as a co-equal branch of government that we are.
Damn Skippy.
It has been 50 days since the people of Arizona's 7th Congressional District elected me to represent them. 50 days that over 800,000 Arizonans have been left without access to the basic services that every constituent deserves. This is an abuse of power. One individual should not be able to unilaterally obstruct the swearing in of a duly elected member of Congress for political reasons.
I'll say damn Skippy to that, too. Her comments go on for quite some time. And then moments after being sworn in, she signed on to the Epstein discharge petition. Wow, folks, it has been a wild ride of a day. With her signature on the Epstein Files discharge petition, and more on exactly what that is and how this is all going to work in a moment, that brings the total number of signatories on that discharge petition to 218. 218, despite the fact that the Trump White House has been putting on the blitz, an incredible pressure campaign, specifically targeting Congresswoman Nancy Mace and Lauren Boebert to get them to withdraw their support and not sign the discharge petition, going so far as to bringing Lauren Boebert into the Situation Room. Yeah, that Situation Room, you know, where they usually coordinate like military incursions and strikes. No. Boebert in the Situation Room, getting the pressure campaign from Donald Trump, Pam Bondi, and Kash Patel. She refused to budge. I don't think I was ever going to say these words before, but good on ya, Lauren Boebert, Nancy Mace. They tried to reach her repeatedly. Apparently, she was playing a little bit of phone tag with the president. Good on Nancy Mace, too. They both signed the discharge petition. I cannot believe the words coming out of my mouth. And all of this has sparked an absolute firestorm today. Tranches of Epstein emails have been released. It started this morning with a release of a number of emails from the House Oversight Committee. Remember, that committee basically was forced by Democrats to issue these subpoenas for some of these records directly from the Epstein estate. The three emails that sort of touched off the firestorm this morning are emails about Donald Trump written by Jeffrey Epstein. All of these years after he skated by in 2008, barely getting a slap on the wrist. Here are some of the things that were discussed. Epstein says to Ghislaine Maxwell that Trump spent hours in his house, meaning Epstein's house, with Epstein victim Virginia Guifre. I always get her name wrong. That's pretty interesting. Here's Jeffrey Epstein telling Michael Wolff, the author and journalist in 2019, that he was never a member of Mar-a-Lago. Remember Trump's big thing is like, yeah, I decided I didn't want him. I kicked him out of Mar-a-Lago. Here's Epstein saying, never asked me to leave the club. I was never a member ever. And saying this quote, of course, he, Trump, knew about the girls as he asked Ghislaine to stop, end quote. Maybe this is referring to people getting poached from the Mar-a-Lago spa to come, quote, work for Jeffrey Epstein. unbelievable. There's also a communication dating from 2015 between Michael Wolff and Jeffrey Epstein about Trump possibly being asked questions in a televised presidential debate from December of 2015, and Epstein asking Michael Wolff if I could tell Trump basically what to say if they ask him about me, what should I tell him, right? Eugh, ouch. By the way, CNN never asked those questions at that December 2015 debate. In response, House Republicans have now begun to release additional emails. And I have to tell you, every next email I find is more and more gross. For example, there is an email between Jeffrey Epstein and some guy named Thorborn Jagland. And he talks, this is Jeffrey emailing this Thorborn guy in 2018 in June, telling him this: hey, Thorborn, you might suggest to Putin that Lavrov can get insight on talking to Trump, on how to talk to Trump by talking to me. Vitaly Churkin did that, but he's died. Jagland writes back, yeah, I meet with Lavrov's assistant on Monday, and I'll suggest that. Thank you for a lovely evening. And then Epstein responds again, Churkin was great. He understood Trump after our conversations. It is not complex. Trump must be seen to get something. It's that simple. Weird. Okay, is that the same Sergey Lavrov guy? And this is back in 2018. It all is just unseemly, to say the very least. Then there's emails between Epstein and a private equity guy named Tom Barrack. Epstein saying to Barrack, send me photos of you and child. Make me smile. And all of that communication came up after Epstein told Barrack that he was receiving lots of phone calls about his relationship with Trump. It's just so creepy and weird. Then there's some emails between Epstein and this guy named Landon Thomas with the subject line, Trump. It ends with Epstein telling Landon that here was my, sending him a link apparently to a photo of some beautiful woman. This is my 20-year-old girlfriend in 93 that after 2 years I gave to Donald, meaning he gave him this woman. It's pretty incredible. And all of this came up because there were additional communications in this same email train about Trump and the Hawaiian Tropic girl, and photos of Trump and girls in bikinis in Epstein's kitchen. I mean, wow. It is just, release the files. I mean, release the files, right? I don't know what else to say. And this guy, Barrack, is the current ambassador to Turkey. Release the files. My goodness. Anyway, so what then transpired was probably one of the most awkward press gaggles for Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt in a very, very, very long time. Here's Caroline Leavitt talking about that the emails prove nothing other than the fact that your boss is a creep and hung out with a sex trafficker. Ew, maybe something else. Again, never charged with any crime, not facing any criminal allegations, but boy, gross. Take a listen.
These emails prove absolutely nothing other than the fact that President Trump did nothing wrong. And what President Trump has always said is that he was from Palm Beach and so was Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein was a member at Mar-a-Lago until President Trump kicked him out because
just
Jeffrey
the Palm
Epstein
Beach connection. Wrap this. Did nothing wrong? Define wrong, Caroline. By the way, she trots out yet again that Epstein was a member at Mar-a-Lago. We're looking at emails today that say from Epstein's mouth that that is a lie, that he never was a member. Of course, all of this is nothing more than a big hoax by Democrats, as if we were plotting with Epstein back in, I don't know, 2018 and 50. Like, Democrats had nothing to do with these communications between Epstein and now Donald Trump's ambassador to Turkey, or Epstein and these guys with connections to Putin. Democrats didn't have any. What? Take a listen to this nonsense, also from Levitt earlier today.
This administration has done more with respect to transparency when it comes to Jeffrey Epstein than any administration ever. In fact, this administration, the Department of Justice, has turned over tens of thousands of documents to the American people. We are cooperating and showing support for the House Oversight Committee. That's part of the reason you are seeing these documents that were released today, because of the House Oversight Committee's and Republicans' efforts to get these out to the public.
Which they were forced to do because Democrats made them. And again, these weren't emails obtained by the House Oversight Committee from the FBI or the DOJ. They were subpoenas to Epstein's estate, which turned over. Oh, Caroline Levitt, very hard for her to follow the bouncing ball, apparently. Also, Democrats never ran on Epstein, right? Like, the entire Epstein obsession, the Pizzagate, the global ring of sex trafficking, that was always the QAnon MAGA thing. It was never the Democratic thing. So, you know, funny how that works when you promise people that you're going to blow up the global pedophile trafficking ring in your campaign, and you run on that basically for a decade. Hey, when you get elected, people might expect you to turn over the files like you kept promising that you would do. I mean, we could use an entire all 2 hours of our show and literally just play sound of, like, pick one, FBI Director Kash Patel, Deputy Director Dan Bongino, talking on podcast after podcast after podcast about how there's no reason to not release the files, that they would immediately turn all of them over. Pam Bondi in interview after interview after interview saying there's absolutely no legal reason why none of these should be. So what's the change here, folks? Huh? Why a little different? Just seems very, very suspicious. Folks, we're going to take a breath. I'm going to come back to the story that continues to explode this afternoon. Republican Thomas Massie now calling out other MAGA representatives in Congress, encouraging them to think about a time when Trump is not in the White House anymore. We'll take a look at that. Get your thoughts if you've got a few. I bet you do. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. A doozy of a news day here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. The creepiness that keeps rolling out from these emails is pretty insane. And let's just keep this in mind. Unless you had Democrats pushing in the House, none of this stuff would have been released by the Trump Department of Justice. I mean, really? Come on. He doesn't like being embarrassed at all, ever, about even tiny things. So, yeah, if you're concerned about this and you think it's important that we're seeing some of these emails and documents, you just thank Democrats. Thank Democrats in the House. Here is what Thomas Massie told MAGAs in Congress. They need to consider a post-Trump world ahead of the full floor vote on whether to release the Epstein files, saying, quote, they need to look past 2028 and wonder if they want this on the record, on their record for the rest of their political career. Maybe the fissures are starting. Republican Representative Don Bacon, who did not himself sign the House discharge petition, says he will vote for the Massie-Rokana bill to release the Epstein files. Lawmakers in both parties are reporting that they expect as many as 100 MAGA lawmakers to do the same in Congress. Is the dam starting to break? Here's just a couple of other, like, ugh, gross emails that came out. In a 2018 email from Jeffrey Epstein to Lawrence Summers, the former Treasury Secretary and current Harvard University president, Epstein described Mr. Trump as, quote, borderline insane. A year later, an Epstein associate dismissed Mr. Trump's financial disclosures as, quote, 100 pages of nonsense. Here's another one. Jeffrey Epstein criticized Trump in an email exchange from 2017, concurring with a note from the former White House counsel, Kathy Rumler, that Trump was, quote, so gross and worse in real life and up close. You cannot make this stuff up. A couple of good questions and comments on the text line. You got a thought, a question, comment, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. John from Oshkosh asks this. Maggie, based on your legal expertise, is there reason to be concerned that the Trump-Epstein files have been scrubbed and really won't show anything? I feel the orange snake may slither out of yet another crime. Funny that you mention that. Let's take cut 22, Jacob.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of pages of five. They'll redact every Republican or conservative person in those files. Leave all the liberal Democratic people in those files.
I think they visited that Maxwell person.
Yeah.
And also involved.
Got transferred to a minimum security prison too recently, which is against BOP policy because she's a convicted sex offender. They're offering her something to keep her on show.
And what do you do for work here?
I work for the Department of Justice.
Okay.
Been there like 23 years. I'm an analyst. I'll be acting deputy chief of our office for a few months starting next week. I work closely with like all the federal law enforcement agencies and the U.S. attorney's offices, the prosecutors and stuff. The thing is, it's interesting because I do deal with so many of the agencies, like the Bureau of Prisons, the Marshal Service, the FBI, U.S. attorney's office.
Yeah, that's DOJ official Joseph Schnitt, who described himself as an analyst and potentially going to be a deputy acting chief of some office, didn't say where. This was recorded and released by far-right operative James O'Keefe. Again, why would a far-right operative do this? Because the whole pedophile global sex trafficking thing has been an obsession of the far-right and the MAGA movement, going back to the days of QAnon. So to answer your question in part, I don't trust anything that comes out of the Trump Department of Justice. Nothing, not a Zippo zilch. Because they're lying in court documents. They're refusing to follow court orders. And they have basically loyalty litmus tests. So why, if the filter for everything that comes out of the Trump administration is this good for our guy? And all he's done is install loyalists, no matter how corrupt and no matter how incompetent, so that they'll just do his bidding. Psh, I wouldn't trust anything that comes out of the FBI or the Department of Justice. Brett from Brown Deer on the text line saying this, Republicans are releasing the files. It took 218 votes to release the files. How many were actual Republicans versus Democrats? The votes don't lie. Majority Democrats. There were only 5 Republicans that signed the discharge petition. Massey, Mace, MTG and Boebert, that's 4, excuse me, 4 Republicans. That's how they got to the 218. Kirk from Madison says, I'm actually looking forward to hearing my Republican and MAGA supporting friends defending the orange blob on the Epstein emails. No kidding. Here's a great legal question. Mark from Prairie du Sac asked me, can Congress subpoena the people who scrubbed the Epstein records for Bondi and Trump and ask them what they removed? Yes. But that requires Democrats to actually win control of the House in 2026 to convene an investigatory committee that will actually issue subpoenas. The MAGA-dominated House, although by a very slim margin, has been reticent to do so. I mean, this was the whole deal with why Speaker feckless, magical thinking Mike Jack Hole Johnson didn't want to swear in Adelita Grijalva because all of this he knew was going to happen. Now, again, reports that perhaps up to 100 MAGA congresspersons will vote to release the Epstein files. Folks, we're going to have to leave it there, but do not go anywhere. We got a really special edition of Broad Appeal. I talked to Hellcat, candidate for New Jersey's 7th Congressional District, Rebecca Bennett. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Wild news day, folks. You cannot make it up. Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Wednesday. It's 4:30, so it's time for one of my favorite segments of the week. We call it Broad Appeal here on The Maggie Dawn Show because I like to celebrate and talk to amazing women who are organizers, activists, candidates, and elected officials. Women as candidates and in these roles of political leadership, I think really do have broad appeal. They see needs in their communities. They've got great ideas about how to meet those needs. And so, again, it's always a pleasure to be talking with amazing women doing great things here in Wisconsin and also well beyond the boundaries of Wisconsin. We've got one such amazing broad, if I may, joining me today. She is a candidate for New Jersey's 7th Congressional District. Her name is Rebecca Bennett. She is a veteran, and she's part of a little contingency of women candidates coming up running for congressional races. They call themselves the Hellcats. If you've heard this term before, it may be because you are a military history buff. The Hellcats, of course, were aircraft used by the United States and other allied forces during World War II. They were carrier-based aircraft. And it became a slang term, really, for women that like to get stuff done and do get it done. So with all of that as prequel, Rebecca, thank you for being here. Thank you for our service as well.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be on, so I appreciate that.
Last Tuesday, big wins for two women that have also been in public service, one veteran, one CIA veteran, I shall say, as well, and Mikey Sherrill and Abigail Spanberger, two governors-elect now. Amazing day for women as candidates and women as candidates who have been public servants, right, in this other capacity. Did that give you and the other three, two amazing women that you have termed and grouped together as Hellcats, I would imagine that's given you a big lift, some encouragement, feeling pretty good about your chances next year?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'll just say, quick background on me, I'm a former Navy helicopter pilot, so I flew the Navy version of the Army Black Hawk for over a decade. I led missions, people, and teams all over the world. And so, you know, I will say that this is one of the things that we've been telling people and sharing is being able to say, you know, I've led in some of the most challenging environments that exist on this earth. I've led missions in the middle of the ocean, in the middle of the night, when there's literally no margin for error. And also, I'm a mom of two kids. And so I fundamentally understand the challenges that families are facing in my district because my family is dealing with those challenges too. And I think that's what we saw last week with both Mikey and Abigail Spanberger down in Virginia is, you know, they are both national security moms. And so they are able to show that they are incredibly strong leaders. They're going to be able to get the job done and fight for all of us in a way that we're all looking for right now. But they also understand the challenges that families are facing. And, you know, I'll just say in New Jersey, Mikey was really laser focused on affordability and talking about the issues that families are facing. And so it was incredibly inspiring to see them up there with their families too. And I remember the next day after being able to tell my daughter that Mikey had won as the governor, and just the smile she had on her face was just really incredible. And so it was just an amazing night on Tuesday last week for sure.
Oh, that makes my heart feel real big to hear that your daughter especially was inspired by that. Here's the other thing. When we look at yourself, again, folks, I'm talking with Rebecca Bennett. She's running for New Jersey's 7th Congressional District. She's a 15-year Navy veteran. She's one of a group of women running for congressional offices called the Hellcats. She is joined in that regard by Joanna Mendoza, running for Arizona's 6th, as well as Kate Conley, running in New York's 17th CD. All of you are military veterans. I think, you know, again, what I found most encouraging about both Mikey's win and Abigail's win in Virginia, Mikey, of course, in New Jersey, was the fact that When I listen to these women speak and speak about their service, these aren't like slickly managed, manicured. I don't get any of the, what I just called generic, like, oh God, it's a politician cringe sort of reaction. They're just so authentic. Again, both of them speaking to what are issues for every single working family in the United States at this point in time. And looking and reading about yourself, Joanna, and Kate as well. Also, you're authentic people with a track record of service to the public, right? And I think it makes each of you so uniquely ready to serve in this new way. What made you decide to do this? Because it is grueling. It can be incredibly isolating. And the politics are so hard-nosed and brutalizing right now. What really inspired you?
Yeah. And, you know, to that point, I talk about that a little bit as a DC robot speak, you know, and we just need to talk like regular people.
Yes.
But, you know, I will say, you know, my political origin story is that I was serving on active duty in the Navy the first time that Trump got elected. And so, you know, here I was thinking that we were going to elect the first female commander in chief, and then we did not. And so when I got out of the service, I started volunteering as a grassroots volunteer, just doing all the normal stuff, door knocking, phone banking, all the way through this last election. And then it was really after the last election, when the dust settled, that I really cannot explain it any other way than it was like a switch flipped in my brain. And, you know, I'm the kind of person that just runs at problems. And so I told my husband, he's also a Navy vet, by the way. I told my husband, I said, I have to run for office now. And it's really because I love this country. And for me, it's about, we are at this pivotal moment in our history where I really believe that we are all being called to do more. And I wanted to do everything that I could to fight for this country because I love it. And for me, this is about, what version of the country are we going to live in? What version are we going to leave for my daughters and the next generation? And so that is really why I did this. And for me, it's one of those things, when your nation calls you to serve, you answer the call. And so that's why I'm running. But I would say, you know, this is definitely not in my 5 or 10 year plan to run for office, but you know, so far it's been going really well.
It's my favorite kind of candidate, is the reluctant candidate, right? It's like, I feel compelled to do this. Not that this was on your bingo card or your punch list of to-dos. That always gives me a lot of encouraging hope that people are coming to these candidacies, and if they're elected, they're elected seats with the appropriate dose of humility and focus on what the job is. Mm-hmm. And it's always been one of those things that's bugged me. I hate the elected official that's looking for their like next step up elected official job instead of just focusing on the task at hand. Love the description of yourself as somebody who likes to run at problems. I think we would get along really well in real life, because that has been my lifelong mantra. If the problem seems too big to solve, like, I'll sign up and try to work on that.
Yeah.
Folks, we are talking with one of the self-styled Hellcats, Rebecca Bennett. She's a candidate for New Jersey's 7th Congressional District. She's a 15-year veteran of the U.S. Navy, as she mentioned. She was also an officer in the Air National Guard. Are there particular issues that are motivating for you? Perhaps it's veterans benefits, or looking at affordable childcare, affordable housing. What are some of the issues that are really close to your heart, Rebecca?
Yeah, you know, I would say there's really three kind of key areas here that I've been talking about, that I've been hearing from people, and it's affordability, healthcare, and national security. The affordability piece is that every generation is dealing with its own unique affordability challenges. So when I'm talking to someone in their 20s, they're having a really hard time being able to find that first job. The job market is really tough for people graduating from college right now, or they can't afford to be able to pay for an apartment. And so a lot of people in my district are moving back home with their parents, and they're just having a hard time kind of getting their career launched. People in their 30s and 40s are just having a really hard time being able to raise their families. And, you know, my kids, I have young kids, and when my two girls were in full-time daycare, we were paying over $3,500 a month for them to be in childcare. And it is just, it is just an astronomical amount of money that we are asking families to pay. And childcare is a crisis in this country. And it's one of those things that we are not talking about enough at the national level. And so for me, this is something that, there's not a lot of moms with young kids in office either. And so this is another thing that I really hope to bring and be a voice for, to talk about these issues that families are facing. But, you know, it's also housing is very expensive. Energy prices in New Jersey just jumped by about 20% over the summer. My husband, we got our bill. He was like, did our house break? Like, what happened? Like, why did our
bill go up by so much? Do we need an HVAC guy? Yeah, it's like, yeah, what exactly. is going on?
Like, did we break a, did like my daughter break a window? Like, what's going on? You know, and so, you know, every generation is dealing with its own challenges, and you get into the sandwich generation of people that are taking care of their kids and taking care of their parents. It's all just really tight. And so I think, you know, that's the number one issue I hear from folks. And then the healthcare piece is I've actually been working in healthcare in the private sector for a number of years. And so have been working in a bunch of different spaces. I will say women's health is near and dear to my heart. I've, you know, not just necessarily reproductive rights are incredibly important, but what we're doing to support women across their entire lifespan. The one of the companies I worked at was focused on women going through menopause, which is just a huge unmet need in this country. And we don't even know how to treat women because women weren't even required to be in clinical trials until about 30 years ago. And so we just treat them like small men for a lot of things. So, you know, that's another area that I care a lot about is just how do we make healthcare more affordable and accessible for people in this country. And then on the national security front, I was also an experimental test pilot for the Navy. And so I led the development of technology for the United States and partner nations. And so for me, this is one, what are we doing to make sure that we're really preparing the United States for the 21st century and thinking about how we're developing technology and leveraging AI and thinking about cybersecurity threats to make sure that we're being efficient in how we're developing technology. One of the stories that I like to share here is that I used to fly. So I flew helicopters to the Navy, and I used to fly with an iPad because the computer processors in the aircraft were so slow.
So slow. That,
yes, exactly. And so we basically didn't have the processing power to be able to have a Google moving map equivalent of what we have. So we have 1980s black and green Atari screen that we would have to have up, or I'd have a paper
pixelated
chart, like old school.
Yes.
Yeah. Or it's like old school MapQuest, you know, for anybody that remembers, you know, that back in the day. And so that's the reality of what we're dealing with right now. And so we just have to be able to make that work more efficiently and effectively. And, you know, to your other question, the other piece of this is another area that is really near and dear to my heart is what are we doing to support our veterans and military families, both yeah. when they're serving and then when they come home. You know, I was part of a dual military couple, and so I've seen how hard it is to be home when your partner is deployed. I've also, you know, been deployed. And I personally found that transition getting out of the military and moving into the private sector to be very, very hard. And so I focused a lot of my volunteer work in that space before I decided to run for office, just to try to help people make that transition a little bit smoother. And so, you know, military spouses also are often unemployed or underemployed because it's very hard for them to be able to maintain a career if they're having to move every 3 years, you know, just, yeah. So just, I would say just one story here is one of my friends was a pilot and his wife was a physician, and they wanted to be able to, you know, she's a physician. They got stationed in Germany and she wanted to work and the base needed to hire her because they didn't have enough physicians. And it took so long to get the paperwork through that by the time they finally got the approval to hire her, it was time for them to go back to the States. And what happened is that it had been such a long time that since she'd been able to practice medicine, that then her insurance lapsed in the United States. And so not only could she not practice in Germany, but then she couldn't practice when she got back to the States. And so anyway, those are the types of things that we just have to do a better job of taking care of our veterans and families when they're serving.
When someone serves, their whole family serves right yes. alongside of them. It is our yes. shared moral obligation in this country to be there for our active duty service members as well as our vets. We're going to continue to talk to this special veteran, one of the self-styled Hellcats, three amazing women running for congressional seats in 2026. Her name's Rebecca Bennett. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side. Don't go anywhere because it is a very special edition of Broad Appeal here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Stay with us.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the 4:30 half-hour block on Wednesday, so it is our very special segment, Broad Appeal. Today, I'm joined by one of the amazing four Hellcats. These are all women who have served in our military and are now seeking congressional office. My specific guest today, she's running for New Jersey's 7th Congressional District. She served 15 years in the U.S. Navy. Her name is Rebecca Bennett. Thanks for sticking around with us, Rebecca. We were talking about the affordability crisis in our country. And we specifically have been talking about childcare, housing, veterans benefits, the fact that it's very difficult for people either graduating from college or with technical degrees to find employment right now. We've had now the fourth week of very negative employment numbers being reported. More Americans are more pessimistic now about the economic outlook of this country than at any time since 1951, according to recent polling. Hmm. Pretty bleak. I heard this other statistic just this week as well, and I thought, boy, that says a lot. For a long time, the median age of first-time homeowners fluctuated around like 35, give or take a little bit. In the last 2 years, it's jumped to over 40. Mm-hmm. And it's like such a snapshot that even if people can get there, it's taking so much longer. This is one of those points that I sometimes think I struggle to break through with folks that lean conservative and are a certain generation, because they extrapolate their experiences as a young person, the economy as it worked for them, and look at people that are struggling today and go like, what's your problem? Mm-hmm. You know, put a little elbow grease in. Mm-hmm. I know that you went and got your MBA from Wharton, which is one of the very, very impressive business schools in this country, on the GI Bill. And I just wanted to get your sense, when we look very broadly at economic opportunity and being able to deliver on every American's dream of home ownership and making sure that your kids do better than you can, is there a particular issue that stands out when we look at the affordability crisis that if we can do better on this, other better results will follow?
Yeah, you know, I think this is something that I've been thinking about quite a bit. And, you know, I will say I really consider my life a version of the American dream, because I had an ROTC scholarship for my undergrad, and I worked two jobs on top of that to be able to cover the pieces of my undergrad that weren't covered from my ROTC scholarship. And to your point, I used the GI Bill to pay for my MBA. I used a VA loan to buy my house. And so I am where I am because of programs like that. And so I think, to me, it's about, that's the American dream of, you know, you work hard, you can build the life that you want to be able to build in this country. And so to me, it's about making people feel like that is not out of reach and not out of reality, and that they can do those things. So I think, as far as kind of the issues that are the underlying ones, I think some of it is thinking about what are we going to do to help people move into this new economy that we're going to see, especially as AI continues to become more and more prevalent. We are going to have to make sure that we are giving people job training to help them transition to whatever the new jobs are going to be. And the example I like to point to is, you know, the Industrial Revolution, or back in the 20th century, telephone operators are not a job that exists anymore, but there's new jobs that are created. And so it's, you know, how do we help people transition to that space? And that's where I think we have an opportunity in the United States to be leaders in AI, be leaders in clean energy manufacturing, and to be able to really make sure we're well positioned for the 21st century economy, and to make sure that we're able to get people good paying jobs to be able to make sure they can build that life that they want to be able to build. And then, you know, I think it is solving some of the other issues we're talking about, which are, college is very expensive, childcare is very expensive, we don't have enough houses. And so I think those are the types of things that we can solve for as well there.
For someone as smart and insightful as you are, I'm going to put another one on your radar and list. Yep. Pardon the use of the term radar, pun intended.
That's okay.
And that is, you know, we have really, the Biden administration brought back a lot more pro-competitive, pro-capitalist regulatory enforcement. But what we've seen with this administration is really a dismantling of the federal agencies and their investigatory and enforcement arms that deal with anti-competitive monopolistic behavior. And as we look at AI and technology and who will reap the whirlwind windfall of benefits from these things, it's essential for the job retraining, upskilling, reskilling, relocations, all of those things. But I think equally, we've got to keep our eye on, frankly, antitrust enforcement and who's able to access the benefits of this new economy as we move forward. Folks, if you're just joining us, again, I'm talking with New Jersey's 7th Congressional District Congresswoman-to-be, I'll say. Her name is Rebecca Bennett. She's one of the four, count them four, self-styled Hellcats, women that are military veterans running for Congress in 2026, in good company with Maura Sullivan running in New Hampshire, Kate Conley running in New York, and Joanna Mendoza running in Arizona. I want to share with you one of our regular texters here on the Civic Media Radio Network, Troy from Mount Horeb, texting in from WMDX, says, Rebecca, you are so inspiring. Thank you for your service in the Navy, and thank you for your future service in Congress. I say here to that. Thank you, Troy. Mark from Prairie du Sac said, hey, I built a number of model airplanes when I was a kid. One of them was a Hellcat. So getting some love from our listeners here in Wisconsin. You can find out more about Rebecca and her campaign at Rebecca Bennett. That's two N's, two T's, for forcongress.com. Again, that's Rebecca Bennett. Two N's, two T's, for Congress.com. To close us out this afternoon, Rebecca, I love asking women candidates that come to us here on Broad Appeal, what's something about you that your constituents or the folks listening might be surprised to find out?
I think there's a couple things. One I would say is that no one recruited me to run for this race. I volunteered myself for this. And so there's this statistic out there that something about women need to be asked 7 times before they get asked to run. And I would say, if you're listening to this and you're thinking about running for office, do it, because we need you in those rooms and being those voices. And so I would just encourage you to put yourself out there, because we need you in this fight too. So, yeah.
She raised her hand, saw a need. When called, will serve. Thank you, Rebecca Sullivan. Folks, stay with us. We've got Jessica Denson, a Trump evacuee. She has changed her mind. Stay with us.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.